Coming up, religious leaders in Alabama fighting a tough new immigration law.
The government is trying to tell us what we can or can't do in terms of works of mercy, works of charity, which are fundamental to our faith.
And in Israel, an interfaith village where Israelis and Palestinians intentionally live together in peace.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. The estate of William J. Carter, the Jane Henson Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome. I'm Kim Lawton, sitting in for Bob Abernethy. Thank you for joining us. There's been intense debate at the United Nations General Assembly in New York this week over the Palestinians' controversial request for full recognition as a state. The U.S. has promised a veto in the Security Council, which must approve the request. Religious groups are on both sides of the issue. Jews and evangelical Christians rallied outside the UN in support of Israel, while a coalition of Jewish groups released a petition opposing a unilateral Palestinian bid for statehood right now. But some Christian and Muslim groups supported the idea, saying the time has come for Palestinians to have their own state. Religious leaders across the spectrum urged renewed momentum for peace negotiations. In his address to the assembly, President Obama said there should be no shortcuts to the hard work of negotiating peace.
Peace will not come through statements and resolutions at the United Nations. If it were that easy, it would have been accomplished by now.
Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad generated controversy with a fiery anti-American speech, which railed against Zionism and accused the U.S. and European nations of being slave masters who are ruled by greed, arrogance, and violence. Diplomats from the U.S. and several other countries walked out during the speech. Prior to the meeting, religious freedom activists urged the international community to take a stronger stand against Iran's repression of Baha'is, Christians, dissident Muslims, and other religious minorities. This week, Iran did release two American hikers who'd been held for 2 years on accusations of spying. A delegation of U.S. religious leaders visiting Iran last week were among those advocating for the hikers' release. The delegation included Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, the retired Catholic Archbishop of Washington, Bishop John Chang, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington, and Nihad Awad, head of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. The U.S. leaders met with Ahmadinejad and discussed efforts to promote more dialogue. They also promised to urge the U.S. government to release Iranian prisoners in a show of compassion. Pope Benedict XVI has been on a 4-day visit to Germany, his first official state visit to his native country. In an address to the German parliament, Benedict urged the country not to ignore religion. His trip also included meetings with some of Germany's Jewish and Muslim leaders and a trip to the monastery where Martin Luther, leader of the Protestant Reformation, once studied. At several stops, protesters demonstrated against the church's handling of the sex abuse crisis. Still, many Germans showed their support. Some 70,000 attended a mass with the Pope at Berlin's Olympic Stadium. The first phase of Park 51, the controversial Islamic community center near Ground Zero, opened to the public this week. The opening ceremony featured an exhibit of photographs of children from around the world who now live in New York City. The space where the portraits are on display is just a small part of what developers say will become a 15-story building with a pool, auditorium, and restaurant. There's also a mosque where prayers are already taking place. The plan for the center set off a nationwide controversy last summer. Opponents objected to its presence near Ground Zero. A national Christian organization that provided discounted groceries for the poor has ceased operations. Angel Food Ministries once served up to 500,000 people a month through its large network of church programs. The group blamed the poor economy and rising food prices for its demise. But it had also been surrounded by controversy. In 2009, Angel Food's finances had been investigated by the FBI, and critics raised concerns about the founder's high salaries. No charges were ever filed. A federal judge is expected to rule this week on whether legal challenges to Alabama's tough new immigration law can move forward. Faith groups are among those who filed suit, alleging that the law is unconstitutional. The measure would require law enforcement officials to check the immigration status of anyone they find suspicious. It would also prohibit people from harboring or even helping undocumented immigrants. Many state religious leaders say this could hinder their ministries. Lucky Severson reports.
Like many church leaders in Alabama, Father Tom Ackerman of the Catholic Diocese of Birmingham was caught off guard by the toughness of the state's new immigration bill.
I think there was some surprise about how extreme it was and how really sort of vicious it was, particularly some of the vicious rhetoric. We want to affect every aspect of their lives. I'll do everything short of shooting them. These are senators and representatives saying these things.
Here's what Mayor Lindsay Lyons of Albertville, Alabama, had to say about the bill's critics.
One way they say it, we're cruel or heartless or however they want to word it. You know, the fact of the matter is, we have rights. We have rights to protect our citizens. And what is wrong with coming up with solutions to protect our citizens, protect our jobs, and protect our quality of life?
We must say no!
The solution the legislature came up with has caused quite a commotion. A federal judge temporarily blocked the enactment of House Bill 56 because of several lawsuits filed by four Alabama bishops of different denominations, the Justice Department, the ACLU, civil rights groups joined by county sheriffs and 16 foreign governments. But some of the loudest protests came from church leaders like Pastor Angie Wright of the beloved Community United Church of Christ.
If I have 10 undocumented persons in my church for an English as a second language class or for worship or vacation Bible school, and I know that they're undocumented, I can go to prison for 10 years and pay a $15,000 fine.
In a nutshell, the bill, as it stands now, criminalizes working, renting, having false papers, shielding, harboring, hiring, and transporting undocumented immigrants. It also deprives them of most local public benefits. As it was intended, it punishes just about every aspect of illegal immigration.
The reason why we filed this suit is because we want to keep the government out of our business. The government is trying to tell us what we can't or can't do in terms of works of mercy, works of charity, which are fundamental to our faith.
Coming up on the left is where most of the Hispanics worked here in town. This was a poultry processing plant.
Representative Dan Williams was mayor of Athens, Alabama for 18 years until he ran for the legislature 3 years ago. He supports House Bill 56.
The vast majority of people, when I was running for this office, the number one or two issue with them was illegal aliens. That's it, illegal aliens. You need to do something about them. We want something done about them.
Williams was elected with the first Republican sweep of both houses in the legislature and the governorship in Alabama history. The new legislators quickly hammered out an immigration law, one that terrifies Jeanette, an undocumented mother of two from Mexico who has been in the U.S. for more than 10 years. She's a cashier in a store. Her husband works in construction.
No nos gusta salir. No vamos a restaurantes.
It's terrorizing. Ever since they passed this law, we don't go out. We don't go to restaurants.
No vamos a parques.
We don't go to the park.
Vemos una patrulla.
We see
y nos da terror pensar que nos va a parar.
And it terrifies us to think they may stop.
She and her husband are buying their home at a very high mortgage rate. The new bill would allow the bank or anyone they have a contract with to cancel the contract, and they would have no recourse.
Well, I came here because my family didn't even have any way to eat.
Para lograr tener esto, trabajamos de día, de noche, tres trabajos.
To get this, we've worked day and night, three jobs. Well, if I have to leave here one day to the next, if this law goes into effect, I'm going to have to leave my house, my car.
Vamos a llegar a nuestros países peor.
We're going to arrive back home in our home countries worse shape.
Why make criminals out of people who have been our neighbors and our brothers and sisters and really are not causing any problems for any of us?
An Alabama criminal justice survey found that violent crime in the state is down 10% over last year and below the national average, Property crime is also down. But Albertville Mayor Lyons says those statistics don't hold up in his town.
When you have people coming from other countries that's never driven a car before, and they start driving here with no insurance, no driver's license, etc., causing many accidents.
But, he says, that wasn't the worst of it.
Because invariably you're going to have the underlying current of crime and criminals come in with an influx of the illegal immigrants. And that all is based on prostitution and brothels, your drug activity, your drug gangs, which have been present here in Albertville. That's like it is in any community where you have the immigrant issue.
He says hundreds of illegal immigrants moved in after Albertville-based poultry companies advertised in Mexico looking for cheap labor.
We had probably with our large two poultry plants here, 2,500 employment. They were vast, all white and black American citizens, okay? And as the years went on and they were able to conduct business with the illegal alien population, well, that just dwindled down.
The Pew Hispanic Center estimates there are between 85 and 120,000 undocumented immigrants in Alabama, comprising a little less than 4% of the workforce. The state's unemployment rate is above the national average at about 10%.
We have high unemployment not because the Hispanic immigrants are here. We have high unemployment because the housing market went bust and we had a credit crisis. The immigrants have nothing to do with the high unemployment here. I think it's primarily politicians preying on the fear of people. When economic times get tough, people often look for scapegoats.
You know, I go back, it's the economy, stupid. That's what it always is. And people can say what they want to, but when you got a job and you're making some money and your family's doing all right, you don't have problems. But when my children lose their jobs and I start having to help my children and my grandchildren, and maybe if I lose my job, I'm concerned about a guy who's illegal coming here working. He's doing okay and I'm not.
The legislation authorizes police to demand papers from people they stop who they suspect are undocumented, something opponents say will lead to racial profiling. That's already happening, according to Father Ackerman.
One of our priests actually has been stopped several times, pulled over. And then once they see that he has a collar on, oh, Father, go ahead.
Religious leaders are concerned that they will be breaking the law if they transport members they know are illegal to church.
If we're transporting illegal immigrants, that's a violation of this law, and those vehicles can be confiscated.
Representative Williams says he thinks religious leaders' opposition to the bill is overblown.
I don't think you're going to see policemen stopping the church buses to see if there's somebody with brown skin riding to Sunday school.
If that wasn't going to happen, then they should have written that into the law. I'm talking about how the law is written, not how they expect it to be applied.
Williams says he and his Republican colleagues have been called racist and that it's unfair.
People still look at Alabama and they see those grainy films of the 1960s and the police dogs and the water hoses in Birmingham. Well, Alabama's not like that anymore, but they're trying to bring this back, that's what we are.
I, myself, overwhelmingly love this country.
The young man speaking here, Victor, was brought here by his parents when he was a toddler. Victor is undocumented and part of a group of high school kids calling themselves Dreamers, who have been very vocal against the law because they're the ones who will likely suffer the most if they or their parents are deported. This is Jose. He's undocumented. He says his dream was to become a teacher or a doctor.
I came here at the age of 3. In all honesty, Mexico, it seems like a foreign world to me. And with all the problems it has now, it's frightening, the thought of having to go back there.
Eduardo has his papers, unlike many of his friends.
I'm mostly sad because I got papers and then my friends, most of them are going to have to go back to their country or whatever. And I'm here lucky being able to have the education and all the benefits they can't.
You know, we're all trying to get along. We're all trying to raise our children, our grandchildren and everything. It's just you got that illegal word there that makes a difference.
The judge who stayed the enactment of the law says she will issue her decision by September 29th. Regardless of the outcome, it is likely to be appealed. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Birmingham, Alabama.
This week's debate at the UN over statehood for the Palestinians has once again highlighted the conflict that has plagued that region for decades. During my recent trip to the Holy Land, I spoke with interfaith leaders about how the political stalemate affects their efforts to promote dialogue and reconciliation. And I visited an interfaith village in Israel where Jews and Israeli Arabs intentionally live together as a witness for peace.
Nestled in the hills between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem is a small village called the Oasis of Peace, in Hebrew, Neves Shalom, and in Arabic, Wahat al-Salam. While the Middle East conflict continues to churn all around, here they're trying to create a different reality, one that says Israelis and Arabs can live side by side in peace.
It's possible. We need to learn how to make the impossible possible. We don't take in our consideration impossible. It's possible. Let's do it now.
Neves Shalom Wahat al-Salam was founded more than 30 years ago by an Egyptian-born Dominican monk, Father Bruno Husser, who died in 1996. He wanted to create a place where Jews, Muslims, and Christians intentionally lived together in mutual understanding and respect.
His interest was to deal with the conflict. Why do we have a conflict? How can we influence the dynamics of the conflict and to change it for dynamics of peace building?
Abdesalam Najjar is an Arab Muslim from the Galilee region of Israel. He was part of the first group to move here 33 years ago.
Why did you want to do this? Why did you want to be part of this?
You ask me a very difficult question. You assume that I know the answer. I don't know. For me, I said, it's a way that we can deal with the conflict in an alternative way. Cooperation instead of confrontation. Dialogue instead of fight.
Today, 55 families live here, and another 30 families are in the process of moving in. Others are on a waiting list if space becomes available. The community screens applicants and chooses who will live here.
We need groups that they are capable to understand the differences between us and not trying to change the other, mainly to work on the self. And the transformation will start from within and not transforming the others.
In Neves Shalom Wahat al-Salam, there's a big emphasis on education, not just for those who live here, but for the greater community as well. The bilingual Hebrew-Arabic primary school has 200 students, the vast majority from outside the village.
The most important thing that we are trying to keep equality between Arab and Jewish pupils, and the staff also Arab and Jewish teachers.
And there's adult education as well. Nava Zonenshine directs programs at the School for Peace, which sponsors encounter groups and conflict resolution seminars.
People have to learn histories they didn't know of the other side, learn power relations and how to share more equally, learn how to change the images that they have on the other side. So these are challenges that we have to deal all the time with.
Zonenshine, who's Jewish, also moved to the village more than 30 years ago. She raised her three children here.
They don't see the other as an enemy. Everywhere they go, they will fight for equality, for justice. So it's something very deep in their experience, not just that they heard about it, but they lived this.
Rabbi Ron Kronish says Neves Shalom Wahat al-Salam is one of several interfaith projects taking place despite the ongoing tensions in the region.
These things don't make the news. I often joke because we don't kill anybody, we don't make the news, or we don't make page one anyway. So I'd like people to know that there are a lot of people in this country who are into dialogue, education, getting to know other, trying to live together.
Kronish has lived in Israel for 32 years and directs the Interreligious Coordinating Council based in Jerusalem. Interfaith work here has two tracks. One is promoting dialogue inside Israel proper between the majority Jewish population and the 20% who are Arab Muslims and Christians. The other track is promoting dialogue between people from Israel and the Palestinian territories, which can be especially difficult given security concerns. Cronus says the ongoing political stalemate does complicate all their work.
When there's not a war or lots of terror or counterterror and all that, it's easier to bring people together on the one hand. On the other hand, the lack of political hope and the lack of political progress keeps people from coming out in larger numbers. Some people say, what for?
When sometimes there is something on the political arena, the conflict, let me say, violence, terror events somewhere, the whole issues are became very complicated, very mixed.
Cronish works closely on the council with Issa Jaber Abu Ghosh, a Palestinian Muslim who lives just outside Jerusalem in the Arab town of Abu Ghosh, which is named for his family. They believe building relationships between individuals lays the groundwork for peace.
We don't invite people to our dialogues to solve the problem. We invite them to get to know one another, to be in place, to do what you can to mitigate violence and hatred.
Cronish admits the lack of political progress can be discouraging, but he takes heart in his interfaith work with kids.
My hope is more in the younger generation, to tell you the truth, who are less cynical and less tired, and who don't have easy political solutions, because we don't have those around here, but who are reaching out to know each other, to encounter the other, to work with each other, to do small things together, to do what's feasible at the current time.
At Neves Shalom Wahat As-Salam, many say spirituality is also a key part of building the framework for peace.
I believe, and there are some others believes, that the peace education and the peace actions in the absence of the spiritual factor will be not complete. And if we will use the spiritual factor, we will be more able, more courage to do a peaceful action.
Here, there are many places where people of all faiths and those of no faiths can pray or meditate. One of the most unusual spots is called the Space of Silence.
See, it's a shape, very beautiful. You can come inside. You can pray, you can meditate as Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, anything. But everything should be in silence.
Here, there are no walls and no sharp edges. Najjar says the founder, Father Bruno, believed you can't talk to others until you talk to God and yourself. His vision was that by pursuing peace, people are doing God's work, whatever their belief system may be.
This is the most important thing, the outcome, the results. If the results is what God wants from us to do, we do it. Everybody with his own way.
And that's the work they intend to continue and expand, no matter what happens in the political world outside.
Finally, on our calendar, the holiest time on the Jewish calendar begins Thursday with Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and it ends 10 days later with Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. During high holiday services, congregants hear the sounding of the ram's horn, the shofar. Rabbi Erwin Tannenbaum of Williamsville, New York, says it's a kind of wake-up call.
It's a reminder, it sends a shiver that we can be better than we are. And how do we approach God but with that strange cry in our ear and perhaps on our lip? And we come before God and we say, who are we? What are we? Remember what we could be and help us along.
Also this coming week, Hindus begin celebrating their most important nine-night Navratri festival, which honors their Divine Mother and her various forms. Among her most popular manifestations are Durga, the warrior deity, and Lakshmi, the deity of wealth and prosperity. This year, amid rising concerns about pollution in the sacred Ganges River, artisans in India are making eco-friendly statues of the deities. The statues are made of materials that will eventually decompose when the festival is over. That's our program for now. I'm Kim Lawton. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, where I have a fan page too. Find us on YouTube and watch us anytime, anywhere on smartphones and iPhones. There's also much more on our website. You can comment on all of our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, music from Verizon's How Sweet the Sound competition to find the best gospel choir in America. At this week's Washington, D.C. regional competition, the winner was the James E. Jordan Jr. Adult Choir from Riverdale, Maryland.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics Newsweekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. The estate of William J. Carter, the Jane Henson Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Be More. PBS.